scores!
Ruiz slides! Rollins has won it! They stream out of the dugout! Yeah. Rollins ball near third! This game is over!
Second deck walk-off home run! Grand slam, Bryce Harper!
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hitting Season. This is episode 514. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we'll get to some Phil's news to start off the show. They made an official coaching hire, and we'll talk a little bit about a couple of Phillies who have been named finalists for the Silver Slugger Award. Also, I ran across a Phillies rumor that you guys would be interested in, so we'll talk about that coming up here in just a minute. The World Series gets underway this week. Our two favorite teams, the two teams we were just wishing and hoping would make it, have done what we've asked, and they are in the Fall Classic. The Braves and the Astros are going to play in the World Series this week, so we'll talk about that a little bit coming up. And also, we finally got some we're finally starting to see the major players in the Major League Baseball labor wars starting to use the media to their benefit. So now, I mean, I had thought we would see this coming about a month and a half, 2 months ago. We're starting to get into it now. So we're going to have a fun offseason talking about labor wars with a Z. So joining me to talk about all those different kinds of things are my good friends Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Of course, you know Liz from Yahoo Sports. You follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are you?
I'm doing great. My house smells like pumpkin bread. So life's pretty good right now.
Yeah, this is the time of year for pumpkin stuff. We were talking before the show about the need for pumpkin things to remain a year-round thing. And by the way, all the pumpkin stuff, all the pumpkin spice stuff it's not actually pumpkin that we're tasting. It's like the ginger and cinnamon sugar and all that kind of stuff. Pumpkin itself actually tastes horrible, like in and of itself. It has to be pretty well zhuzhed up, right, Liz?
I make a pretty fine, the answer is yes, because my next thing is I make a pretty fine, like, pumpkin Alfredo.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, well, yeah. Pasta, if you use it's very delicious.
Yeah, if you use it as a savory, yes, I guess you're right. Like, pumpkin soup is pretty good too if you make it right. So pumpkin can be turned into good things, but like people,
it's
you know,
not
if
like
you've...
an orange. You can't just eat it.
Don't just crack open a can of canned pumpkin with a spoon and just kind of, you know, take some bites from it. That's not how you want to do that, friends. Just a little bit of word to the wise. Justin Clue from Continued Success and the Dirty Inning in a Baseball Prospectus. You follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, what's up, bud?
So I was on a video shoot the other night, and I saw it was on a farm, and there were some cows eating pumpkins. And someone had just thrown like a bunch of pumpkins over a fence into a cow pasture. And these two cows were just munching away as I walked to the set. And then, you know, 12 hours later, when I was walking back to my car briefly before sunrise, they were still just out there in the pitch black, munching in this pile of pumpkins. I said, good night, ladies, and went to my car. Looked like they were having the time of their lives. So that's my pumpkin story.
Cow sounds pretty great.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you're left out in the rain sometimes, so I don't know how that goes, but it doesn't sound like, and you know, I think being a cow, especially if you're a milk cow, it's a little invasive, you know. You don't really have any personal, you know, say over your, you know, your person as a milking cow, right? You know, I think that'd be weird.
But
how
once in a while,
self-identity. Sorry,
Dad. Once in a while, some good Samaritan chucks an armload of gourds over your fence post.
That's right. That's right. So I guess in that case, it is good.
It makes
to be
all the personal violations worth it.
That's right. Exactly right. That's what I was going for there. Well, let's start off the show with the Phillies news that we have. And of course, it's just crackling this time of year. The Phillies made it official. They've hired Bobby Dickerson to be their infield coach once again. Bobby Dickerson, it's his second time around with the Phillies. He was with the team in 2019, and this was a season in which Rhys Hoskins had his best season on defense, and Michael Franco turned in his best season on defense. I was reading a piece from Scott Lauber in the Inquirer about that today, and so once again, we have another Phillies assistant coach that's been hired who is great. He does great things. This is another coaching hire that's just perfect for what they need, and I'm excited, guys, because it's just it fits in with all of the other coaching hires this team has made over the years, that they're all just the right fit, and they're exactly what this team needs. And so I'm excited. I'm excited, Justin, that, you know, we've got yet another awesome. We just keep bringing in the best of the best here.
So I pretty much feel how we've always felt when a coach gets brought in or an executive gets brought in. And, you know, there is a little twist to this one where you can't just say, well, we got to see what he can do first, because this guy was a Phillies infield coach
right
before. So, and he
did do a pretty good job.
Oh, yeah,
he did,
he's good.
Yeah, I was being sarcastic there, but yeah, he did a good job.
No, I totally agree. Just re-familiarizing myself with his body of work today. I was able to find plenty of reasons to be excited that somebody like Bobby Dickerson was coming in to address the league worst defense that is in Philadelphia. But there were also just like funny things about him. Like, did you know when he was drafted and signed, he was a shortstop in the Orioles system, but he never made it to the majors with them because he was in the most unfortunate position of all time for someone who wants to get to the major leagues, which is blocked by Cal Ripken Jr. in the major leagues.
Sucks to be him.
And his baseball idols were Pete Rose and Ryan Sandberg. So Phillies through and through with sparkling reputations.
He bleeds red.
The Phillies brought him on when they were courting Manny Machado initially, which was we drew all kinds of connections. That was like the Phillies'
right
answer to the White Sox bringing in Machado's brother-in-law and like best friend.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about this.
This was the Phillies' version of that, because Dickerson's known Machado since he was 16 years old, which I had forgotten.
Wow. Maybe we can still get him.
So maybe he can. Hey,
I'm good.
No, I mean, things that's completely settled. Bobby, I'm not coming over there. Well, just keep it in mind.
Well, yeah, just don't close the door on anything. I mean,
this team's much less fun and interesting.
Plus, the weather is much worse.
What's a horrible reputation.
What's great is that in 2018, the Phillies also had the league's worst defense, which is a fun thing to read when it's 2021 and you're like, so they just did that twice.
They went back
in the last 4 years. Like, they became not the worst and then went back to being the worst. So I think you could make a fair argument, given the timing, that the Bobby Dickerson's the only thing between the Phillies infield defense and being the worst defense in the league. Of course, putting a lampshade at shortstop would be an improvement over D.D. Gregorius next year, so I have a feeling the Phillies next infield will be better than the worst. And one thing about Dickerson is he's familiar, having worked here before. He's the guy who worked with Rhys Hoskins. He helped him readjust at first base after he had a season in left field.
Yes, he did.
And he even said a lot of things that he might have been doing in the minor leagues also almost got forgotten because he put so much focus and emphasis on trying to be a left fielder. And so, again, this is like more, it's indicative of the Phillies' strategies that have gone astray. Things just haven't, their plans just haven't worked out. And Dickerson's kind of this great indication of that. This is like a conjecture to a point, but like, going into the season, the first time he was hired by the Phillies, Dickerson wasn't sure if he was ever going to like coach in the big leagues again. The Orioles purged their coaching staff, and it was January, and he still didn't have a job. And he was like, well, like, this just might be over. I don't know. I guess I'm like looking outside of the majors for work, which, you know, once you get there, you want to stay as a player, as a coach, however. And then finally, Gabe Kapler and the Phillies called, and he got that job. And so it was like this big dramatic, like, what's going to happen? Oh, okay, the Phillies are calling. Like, they're the team I'm going to be with. Like, thank you, Phillies, coming in at the last minute, quote unquote, to like give me a job in the majors, something I wasn't going to get to do again. A year later, he's taking a bench coach job with the Padres. So,
right,
like, yeah, like on one hand, it might have just been a better job. Like, it is a better job, I feel like, at that point.
Yeah, bench coach is definitely a promotion. Yeah.
Yeah. It's you're like second in command. You got a lot more responsibilities. Dickerson's by all accounts a great coach, like a great manager too, but like a great coach. And the Padres were not the annual letdown that they now kind of have the reputation of being. They were, you know, the beginning of this like young player, we're taking back the NL West revolution. But on the other hand, it's kind of easy to see it as like, oh my God, thank you so much, Phillies. Like, I thought I wasn't going to get to coach in the majors anymore. And then a year later, you know what? I'm out. Like,
good. Yep.
Thanks for him. But I saw the inside of the machine, and maybe it's just time to move on.
But now he's back. And I think it's interesting. You know, we were talking about Bobby Dickerson coming to Philadelphia back in 2019, and, you know, maybe bring Manny Machado with him. Well, it turns out that actually Manny Machado went to San Diego so that Bobby Dickerson would join him there. I think that's why the Padres signed Manny Machado, was to get Bobby Dickerson in town to be the bench coach. But, you know,
I will say this. I know I'm kind of done being excited about these kind of hires. Like I said, John, I'm not telling you not to be, but I feel like last year I went pretty hard on
the Girardi factor is going to trickle down into the rest of this like clubhouse, and things are going to get under control, and things will improve. And they didn't. And Girardi was kind of a direct reason in a lot of cases that they didn't. So like leadership, like intangible leadership that we don't have a direct view of from as far away as we sit from the Phillies. I'm kind of done on being like, this is going to be, because like, yeah, you're right. By all accounts, Bobby Dickerson, he's a great hire. He's a great hire the first time. He's a great hire the second time. Guy knows exactly what he's doing with infielders. He coaches infielders well. I like that he's already familiar with a lot of the guys on the team, a lot of the guys who need to improve. You know, I hope I think he's going to work well with Alec Bohm, the way that Kevin Long's already working with Alec Bohm in Clearwater. But one thing I will say that, like, intangible-wise, it's always interesting to see, like, how these guys have approached coaching and managing in the past. And Dickerson was the manager of the North Mississippi Diamondbacks. Way too many syllables.
Wow, yeah, that's a lot.
back in March 2002, he was their new manager, and he said something that caught my eye, which was, I think the biggest thing missing in a lot of players is they play the game lacking a little passion. One thing I hope to instill upon them is the passion, the desire. And like, you know, any man that could, you could attribute that quote to any manager at any level of baseball. But, you know, that he said it, and this was a team that looked particularly passionless and desireless at times last year. You know, it's not a bad thing for somebody who feels that way to be new to the situation and not as burned out or beaten down as the Phillies looked for a lot of their losses.
Yeah, no, and it was a veteran crew with this Phillies team this year, and that's one of the reasons there was so little juice, and the young guys they did have struggled so much. Hard to have a lot of juice when you're struggling. Phillies Nation noted that Dickerson helped the Phillies to +3 defensive runs saved and -10 outs above average in 2019, which is substantially better than they did here in 2021. I mean, Didi Gregorius had 18 errors this past season, which, I mean, he played like half the season and had 18 errors at shortstop. Alec Bohm had 16 errors. Gene Segura, who was actually pretty good at second base for much of the season, still had 11 errors. And so, Liz, I mean, there's... I started off being sarcastic about Bobby Dickerson because there really are so many bouquets that are thrown around when these guys come on board, and it's just the perfect. But you know, he did have a positive effect on the defense in the 1 year that he was here a couple of years ago, and so it's certainly, if you're going to bring a guy in, this seems like the guy you would want to bring in to be your infield coach.
I mean, I'm like all of you. I can't really get excited about this stuff anymore, especially since, you know, Bobby Dickerson was here. He made a few players better, but it's not like he helped the Phillies become amazing. They were bad that year. They were bad the year after. They were bad this year. They've been bad a long time. They've been bad at defense for quite a while. And, you know, I mean, unless he's going to bring a magic wand with him and make it all better. I've a limited amount of excitement. So sure, why not? He can come along for the ride. Let's see how long it takes him to leave.
I guess the thing here is, you know, Liz, you know, is Alec Bohm just bad? You know what I mean? I mean, there's only so much a coach can do with a defensive player who's just not able to play the position. Now, when Alec Bohm was up in 2020, he didn't look that bad defensively. You know, like it got way worse last year. And with Didi Gregorius, you know, I don't know what was going on with him. Did he really age that much in just 1 year that he went from kind of a below average shortstop to an unmitigated disaster defensively? I mean, if that's the case, then a coach can only do so much if the players around him, if the players that he has can't play. And I think that might be the case with Gregorius. I don't think he can play anymore, but I don't know about Alec Bohm. And so that's going to be a really interesting test case. Man, Alec Bohm is under the microscope this this offseason.
More importantly, I wouldn't care if the Phillies let Didi Gregorius go and he became good somewhere else again. Like, I wouldn't care if that happened. It would be worth it just to have him out of here, because that's how bad of a season he had. Alec Bohm, total opposite, for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I mean, we like, loved... Sorry.
No, I was just going to re-explain that point. Like, they are doubling down on Alec Bohm at third base, which is another reason why you got to think Dickerson's reputation speaks for itself, because they have a young prospect they need to become the center of their, like, a pillar of their franchise. And they decided, hey, we're keeping him at third base. And it's one of the few things they've announced, like, questions they've answered. And they were like, who's going to play third base? They're like, well, our third base prospect, who didn't look like he could play third base, is going to play third base. So to make that happen, you got to give him, like, you know, the best talent available to make him into the third baseman you need him to be now. And they're saying that's Bobby Dickerson.
I just wanted to go back to D.D. Gregorius for a second to illustrate how much I think everyone is done with him, despite, you know, his delightfulness off the field. We were all psyched that he came back. He had a pretty good season with the Phillies.
Oh, absolutely.
I was thrilled because he was fun. He was better than we all expected. And then what he did is that he evened it out by being so terrible that none of us ever want to see him again.
No, it was really a rough year, and that's the thing. And that's the thing with a lot of the players on this team, with the coaches, with Kevin Long coming in. I don't know how much help these coaches are going to be to get more out of these guys. Now, I will say with Alec Bohm, I'm optimistic somewhat because he is young. But with the veteran players, I think they're what they are at this point. So I don't know a whole lot more what he can do. But we'll see what he can do. We'll see what he can do with Alec Bohm specifically defensively. And, you know, if and when Bryson Stott comes up to the big league level next year, what he does it with Bryson Stott, who is playing in the Arizona Fall League and playing really, really well, by the way, which is very encouraging stuff to see. Some other Phillies news. A couple Phillies players, Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto, are up for a Silver Slugger this year. Here's who Bryce Harper is going to be going up against, and they'll give the Silver Slugger to three players. Juan Soto, Nick Castellanos, Harper, Adam Duvall. Really? Adam Duvall is one of the outfielders? Jesse Winker. O'Neill. Is that the kid from the Pirates? And Reynolds.
Reynolds is on the Pirates.
Is that the O'Neill? Is that the Cardinals guy? I don't have it in front of me, so I'm just looking at last names, and I'm blanking on O'Neill. I think O'Neill is the it's a Cardinals outfielder, but don't hold me to that. The NL catcher finalists are Buster Posey, Smith, Realmuto, and Narvaez. Who the heck is Narvaez? Why am I not knowing who these guys are?
He's the Brewers catcher.
Okay, this is not good for me, a baseball podcaster, to not automatically be thinking who these players
are. They had like this terrific tandem catching in Milwaukee this year. That was like part of the reason why they were able to be good without having an offense, and it was Narvaez. And see, now I can't remember the backup's name. Wow.
Well, no, do you want to host Hitting Season? It should be you, because I must have just been so hyper focused on something else. I'm totally blanking on the whole Brewers catcher situation there. So good for you.
I was just thinking. Oh, okay. I mean, there's no way JT Realmuto wins that award. Sorry.
Oh yeah, no, right? Like yeah, I saw his name,
I wouldn't think.
I was a little surprised. There's no way Bryce Harper doesn't, right?
I don't. Win Silver Slugger. He has to.
He will. If they give out three of them, he's at least deserving of a berth of, you know, if you're giving out three of them. Like, maybe one, maybe you have an argument not to give it to him, but, like, if you're giving out three, he gets one.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at pure off, you're giving out three, he's definitely going to get one. And I was right, O'Neill is the Tyler O'Neill from the Cardinals, so I wasn't totally out to lunch on that. And, yeah, Brian Reynolds from Pittsburgh in the outfield. Yeah, I mean, Soto will get one, Bryce Harper will get one. And then I think Nick Castellanos is probably the next guy. And Tyler O'Neill, Brian Reynolds both have higher weighted runs created than those guys, but it's pretty close. But really Harper and Soto are the two locks. Can you imagine if Harper and Soto were still on the same team? That'd be something else, because they were at one point. They both finished with six wins above replacement. Yeah,
the Phillies may have tricked Bryce Harper into coming to Philadelphia, but at least they made the Nationals worse by getting him not to be on the same team as Juan Soto.
They did.
They had a single year of success, and then it's just like it's all terrible now.
Yeah, well, they did. They paid for that 1 year. They remind me a little bit of the Super Bowl Eagles. You know, like they had that like one perfect season, and then it was like, okay, that was fun while it lasted. That's enough now, everybody.
Yes.
So anyway, I'm looking at the catchers list, and yeah, Buster Posey finished with a 140 weighted runs created, which was tops in the National League. JT Realmuto was only at 108. So I know the catchers are, it's a little bit bland, but even Will Smith had a 130 for the Dodgers. So no, it will not. I can't imagine it would be JT Realmuto winning it in the National League. It's probably going to be Buster Posey or Will Smith. They definitely had better offensive years. Omar Narvaez finished with a weighted runs created of 99 with Milwaukee. But you know, again, not terrible. I mean, he definitely was okay, but I'm surprised that he was a finalist when you've got Posey and Smith and Realmuto there. I would think three would be enough and not need to include a guy with a 99, but you know, that's just that's how that shakes out. So yeah, I think we all agree Bryce Harper is going to win Silver Slugger, and it's probably going to be Buster Posey Will Smith is probably the number two guy there. There was one other piece of Philly news I wanted to run by you, and this was from John Heyman. He predicted on his podcast, I guess, called Big Time, Big Time Baseball. Did you guys see this?
It's hilarious seeing what some of these guys are like John Heyman. You associate where did he was at Sports Illustrated, I think, and now he's doing that. And like today, I'm going to talk about it later. But Richard Justice published an article. I was like, oh, is he still at MLB? Nope, it was for Texas Monthly.
Ooh. Oh my gosh. Well, John Heyman predicted on his podcast today that Kyle Schwarber will sign with the Phillies this offseason, noting that Schwarber kind of revived his career this year working with Kevin Long with the Washington Nationals. And so John Heyman, again, I don't know how much a John Heyman prediction means to you guys, Liz, but any stock in that? I mean, it makes sense, I guess, logically, if he really likes Kevin Long, that if the Phillies had some interest and they needed to fill, they definitely need to fill a corner outfield spot. I don't think Schwarber was a disaster in the outfield defensively. He wasn't good, but I think he can at least hang out there. And he's a pretty good bat, especially against, if you're going to go with kind of like a platoon type thing, he's going to play 70% of the plate appearances. And, you know, he smoked a ton of home runs. He had a really good year this year.
I'll say I'm happy to settle for not a disaster in left field, because he is decent offensively. But I feel like that's a really dangerous game for the Phillies to play when they're trying to improve their league worst defense, is putting a guy out there who's built for, I'm going to say, the DH spot, or maybe a first base spot if that, you know, shoving him into left field like he's 2017 Rhys Hoskins. So, you know, at least he has played there before. You know.
Yeah, that's his defensive position in left field. So, I mean, I think you're right. It's not like they're shoving him from the DH spot and asking him to go play left field. He's been doing it for the last few years, but mm-hmm. just not awesome. I mean, yeah, they need a middle of the order bat, Justin. And I don't think they're going to go spend huge money on a middle of the order bat. Kyle Schwarber seems like the kind of player that Dombrowski is kind of looking to spend money on. Like, he's not going to cost you a ton. He's not going to cost you more than a year or two in terms of the length of a contract. That it feels, hearing John Heyman mention that, it feels like a fit that makes sense for what the Phillies probably want to do and what they want to do with their payroll this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Heyman, I think Heyman specifically is going to be throwing the Phillies into the mix for just about anybody this offseason. Yeah. I think he sees the state the Phillies are in and what they could potentially do and how many problems they have, and he's just like, I can fatten all these tweets by putting the Phillies in there, whether I've heard something
That's
or not,
because right.
it'll make
That's
sense
right.
with just about anything. And in this case, it definitely makes sense. They're going to have an opening in left field. Schwarber got a $10 million one-year deal this year. He's got a 2022 mutual option on his deal. It's not going to take a lot, but I don't want to sound repetitive, but if we could get the Kyle Schwarber, who was an absolute stegosaurus in the middle of the Red Sox batting order this year, to come to Philadelphia and protect Bryce Harper in the lineup and just, you know, bat with him in the lineup and be as productive and monstrous as he was as the Red Sox were charging into the postseason this year. Mm-hmm. Undoubtedly a win for the Phillies. Yes, the defensive thing is gonna hurt you. It just is. And I don't know, like, you look at the other areas where the Phillies would presumably be like, well, we can get better defensively in other areas to cover that hole. Center field is a massive problem for the Phillies with no obvious solution. Third base is, well, let's hope Bobby Dickerson can fix Alec Boehm. So, and then shortstop, also a question mark, because one of the best moves the Phillies did this offseason already is not guarantee that Didi Gregorius would be the starting shortstop next year.
Right.
So that side of the field is already kind of is full of landmines. And then you put a guy like Kyle Schwarber out there who does have a strong arm. Like, he does.
Yeah, he does.
He has a cannon. He can throw guys out at the plate. So, like, he's not a complete unsalvageable project out there or anything. But the benefit of having his bat and the kind of bat he can provide is something else the Phillies are looking for. So it's just a matter of, like, what do you want to boost? What do you want to cost? Like, and they got to be able to strike some kind of balance. So if you're bringing Kyle Schwarber in, I'd love to see how you're also balancing that in a way that makes the team better, so that he can provide what he provides while also, you know, having the vulnerabilities he has. That being said, it's so easy to imagine. He's exactly the kind of hitter you can imagine in all these Red Sox highlights coming to Philadelphia and just
tanking,
hitting 170 in like April and May. Like that's it's what it is.
When you were talking about Dickerson earlier, honestly, my first automatic thought was, well, he's going to come to Philadelphia and we'll get to find out how exactly the Phillies will stop him from being a good coach. How the Phillies will ruin him from being good. And I feel like that's my first thought now with almost anyone good who comes to Philadelphia, because it feels like a disease, considering all of the good players that have come through and then sucked. It's like, is there something in the bullpen that they're all eating? Because it seems centered there, but it could spread anywhere at any moment.
The coaches aspect, I don't think the hex, the curse, the disease, whatever it is, I don't think it filters into the coaching staff. I think the coaching staff, the way the Phillies have handled it, has largely been Phillies' incompetence. That has been the chief issue there. And I go back to Rick Kranitz to make that point.
Oh, yeah.
Because, John, I asked Liz and Chris the other night if we could trace the Phillies allowing, being directly responsible for the Braves being in the World Series right now, but we could trace that all the way back to letting Rick Kranitz go to the Braves in favor of Chris Young. And, you know, it's just one thing. Many things contribute to it, but that was a loss. You know, that was a loss, like Davey Lopes was a loss at one point. Like the Phillies dropped off in two major categories that they were getting help in that apparently they were taken for granted.
Yeah, the coaching, there are coaches and there is coaching that matters in the big leagues. It's hard for us as lay people from the outside to see it, but when some of these guys move on, it is noticeable. And yeah, you're right. Davey Lopes was a big one and Rick Kranitz was a big one. And so, you know, we'll see how Kevin Long, Bobby Dickerson do, and whether or not Kevin Long being here means Kyle Schwarber wants to come to Philadelphia. Kyle Schwarber will have some suitors as well, because he was an absolute monster at the plate this year and had some big hits and some big moments and is a lot of playoff experience. That is actually something the Phillies could really use, is somebody with a lot of playoff experience and has a history of coming through in big moments in the playoffs. And so I would not be averse to Kyle Schwarber coming here, but you would have to see what else they're going to do. And, you know, we know there's going to be financial limitations. We know they're not going to go over the luxury tax, and we know there are other players already on the team that are going to get raises, and they're going to have to figure some stuff out. So they're everybody talking about, you know, connecting Phillies to these shortstops. They're not getting one of those guys. Like, it's not going to happen. They've got too many other things to do to spend $30 million on a shortstop. So I think a guy like Kyle Schwarber, who probably will cost $15 to $17 million over a couple of seasons, makes more sense as a guy you're going to plug in there in the number five spot, so you don't have to hit JT Realmuto there. You know, you hit him. You know, Harper, Hoskins, Schwarber most nights, and you know if those guys stay healthy, which is a big question mark too, because Schwarber gets injured, Schwarber gets hurt. That's one of the reasons why the Nationals fell out of the race. Remember when Schwarber was going crazy for Washington? That's when the Nationals went on their run. They actually got back to, I think, within like a handful of games of first place before Schwarber got hurt, and then their season torpedoed. So I think that's a move. It feels like a very Phillies move this offseason, you know, when the offseason eventually gets started. And we're going to talk about that coming up here in just a minute with the Major League Baseball labor news. But we'll step away. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the World Series that gets started on Tuesday between the Braves and the Astros. We'll give you our thoughts on how we see that thing going down and just how tightly we'll be holding our nose while we watch it. So we'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So the Fall Classic is back on Tuesday. The Astros and Braves will get things started. The series will start off in Houston for games 1 and 2 on Tuesday and Wednesday. It's in Atlanta Thursday on Friday, Saturday, Sunday for games 3, 4, 5. Then back to Houston for 6 and 7. A couple interesting notes about this year's World Series. This is the first time that two teams that lost the league championship series the previous season will play in the World Series. So both the Braves and the Astros fell one step short last year and made it past that step this year. So kind of amazing that that's the first time that that's ever happened. One of the other cool things, I think, is with the Dodgers getting knocked out, we are now in the midst of a stretch where we have been without a repeat World Series champion right now since the 1998 to 2000 New York Yankees. Right now, this stretch without a repeat World Series is the longest repeat champion drought in the history of Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NFL, or the NHL. So baseball has had a ton of parity over these last, I guess, 20-some-odd years. And Ryan Fagan of the Sporting News noted that if Atlanta beats Houston, if the Braves beat the Astros in the World Series, that will mean that 15, half of baseball's 30 franchises will have won a World Series over a 21-year stretch. Only three teams, Boston, San Francisco, and St. Louis, will have won multiple titles since 2001. So just some little odds and ends there. I mean, I think, Liz, that this is, if you can put away your dislike as a Phillies fan of the Atlanta Braves and as a baseball fan of the Houston Astros and the cheating scandal, it's actually an interesting World Series, but it's hard to do that, isn't it? I mean, like, it's real hard to put that stuff aside.
I was going to say, are you asking me to do that? Because I can't.
I am not.
Unfortunately.
I am not, no.
Like, I could try to look at it that way, but that's just not how my brain works or how anyone's
right.
works. You know, it's sort of a nightmare all around. It's our least favorite team in the NL East that the Phillies had a chance, multiple chances, to prevent from. They could have stopped this from happening.
They could
at
have.
Numerous points. Various mm-hmm. points over the last month, 2-3 months of the season, they had so many opportunities because the NL East was garbage. And now the Braves are going to the World Series and they're forcing me to root for them. At least, I guess you could call it rooting for them because they're facing the Astros. You know, both teams have had, you know, severe cheating allegations against them sometime in the last decade, but
yeah.
No one's going to talk about that. No one's going to talk about that. And that's actually the most interesting aspect of this entire matchup.
It is, because you did the Braves with the international scandal, the international player signing scandal a few years ago, and that got obviously superseded by what the Astros did. And nobody was talking about the Red Sox, too. I mean, the Red Sox, that they're playing in the ALCS, they also were caught doing cheating, using sign-stealing techniques, not to the degree the Astros did, but certainly enough that they had to let their manager go. And, you know, it's... Justin, I think this is a series where you've got a Braves team that has been building towards this. Remember, they and the Phillies went through a rebuild at the exact same time, right? I mean, they both hit bottom at about the same time, 2015, 2016, 2017, and then both started to build their way back up. The Braves, of course, have streaked past the Phillies and now have won four straight NL East titles and are in the World Series with a chance to win it all and finish climbing the mountain after going the first 111 games of the season at 500 or worse. Like, they didn't have a winning record until August. This stat is amazing to me, Justin. They went their first 111 games before crossing the 500 mark. That is by far the most of any team that's ever made it to the World Series. The 1914 Braves came the closest at 91 games. After that, the 79 Pirates were third at 43 games. And the 85 Cardinals at 41. So you just don't see teams like the Braves, who are under 500 for that long of the season, make it to the World Series. And they have done it by streaking past the Phillies, both in terms of the rebuild and in terms of the standings this year.
Got to always make it about the Phillies on this Phillies podcast,
do.
Don't you?
I do. I reach for that. Yeah.
You're just
yeah.
unbelievable. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, even with all the context that makes it hard, the Braves just definitely have more likable players, and that's the only type of person I'm looking at. We're like, we look at the Braves and the Astros and we cite their sins. I'm looking at like the players rather than the front office, like the and you know, just trying to imagine they're not the Braves. And when you do that, like, they unarguably in my mind have a better story. They've, you know, the Tyler Matzik alone has a better story. But that'll get ignored because it's not like flashy and scandalous. It's just kind of like good and wholesome. The problem is like you're only going to hear the bad ones, like how like the Chop. You're going to hear that debate the entire rest of the postseason. Bob Nightingale's little thread he pulled yesterday with his story about how, oh yeah, you know, this is revenge for the league taking the All-Star game from Atlanta.
I saw that.
As if that is anything. Those are just two things that happened in the same season. Like saying they're you guys know. So looking at players is all you can do, as both of these franchises as wholes are just pretty hideously unlikable. For the Astros' definitive stars, guys like Altuve, Bregman, Correa, they're all still carriers of the Astros' shameful mark, and Correa's holier-than-thou remarks, and Altuve's sad, quiet rehabilitation by the press, and the whole team's rush to move on, and sensitivity to any kind of criticism about the thing that was the worst thing since the Black Sox scandal that we were just all so worked up about, and they just don't want to hear anything negative about it, let alone accountability, is so totally insufferable, and they know it. And their every act is performative, and no matter what happens in the World Series, loss or win will be framed around the cheating scandal. I just wish that at this point they'd go away. Like, I don't mean like, I wish they weren't so good so that you could respond like, well, the Astros are just that good. No, I just want them to go away as in, like, this is where bans and suspensions would give fans, not just like as a punishment to the players, but give fans a chance to maybe not forget that it happened, because we won't, but like to move on. To become less interested the way things churn through the news cycle. But in this particular case, we didn't get to do that with the Astros. Like, we're still mad because 2020 was no fans in the stands. You know, that there wasn't there wasn't even that informal accountability. And we didn't get that, and now we're just stuck with them. And I'll take it a step further. I know I just criticized you for making this about the Phillies, but Richard Justice, I mentioned him earlier, he tweeted a story today for Texas Monthly that's clearly designed to do exactly what I'm doing, stir people up, get them all worked up just before bed on their little podcasts. And he tweeted an article, the gist of which is he tweeted, all the jeering, booing, etc. did was make the Astros closer, tougher, and better. Ugh. Oh, and their fans love them more than ever in a Houston versus everybody themed season.
I'm going to say this.
They've been telling us that we were complete jabronis, that we were the complete worst sports fans on earth for, what, centuries at this point? That's been us. That's our job. At this point, they said it so much that it became part of our identity. And, you know, there's a certain aspect of truth to it. Like, in Philadelphia, everybody cares, everybody's passionate, all that stuff. But I'm glad it's how we're known. I'm glad I know it's not as bad as people think. And I'm glad I know that it's even weirder than actually people think. They think we're all dangerous. We're actually just unhinged and way too online. But my point is, when he said Houston versus everybody, all of sports, commentary, columnists, everybody has made Philadelphia adopt a Philly versus everybody mentality. Earned over the course of generations, over the course of decade after decade of bringing up stuff that you and I and we have no connection to, that we weren't responsible for, that we weren't even alive for. And now that reputation that they wanted, that they tried to scorn us into having, that brand they tried to put on us, they're now just giving it to the Astros after 2 years of barely suffering, after no accountability. How have they said they've been booed? That's the worst thing that's happened to them. That's it. Maybe somebody came down and yelled cheater at Jose Altuve and he cried into his glove.
I think somebody threw an inflatable trash can on the field one time. Yeah,
that's wholesome compared to like what could have happened. And I mean, just a side note on that, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and there was people, non-sports people, trying to remember certain sports narratives. And one guy was like, wasn't there something with batteries? And I was like, oh, here we go. And the other guy was like, oh, yeah, that was like a New York Jets incident. And somebody was like, oh, and then that thing with snowballs. And I was like, oh, here we go. And they were like, yeah, I think New York, like, Giants fans got in trouble for that. And I was like, now we're not even the main characters in the stories you guys we've been telling for years. Like, what the hell is going on? Like, why am I sitting here going like, no, that was Philly fans. But it's not that. But, you know, like, which side am I on? But, like, now our mythology is being burglarized by this team of AHs who cheated, got away with it, had no punishment, and have been acting like either you're stupid for thinking that they cheated, or bringing up that they cheated, or criticizing that they cheated, or you should feel bad for ever being mad at them and that they've been suffering so much. It's been less than two seasons with fans in the stands. I'm sorry. I just that aspect of it blows my mind. So I would never. I won't be rooting for either of these teams, but I would never root for the Astros because their franchise is stained, and their individual players are just They're the jabronis. Just complete jabronis about the entire situation.
Yeah, and Dusty Baker, he still is looking for his first ever work.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I don't care about Dusty Baker. I don't care. I know that's come up a lot, too. I'm sorry to cut you off. I got to throw that in there, too. I know that's a lot of people's life preserver with the Astros. Well, I want to see Dusty Baker win. Well, that's great. I don't care. I don't care if Dusty Baker never wins a World Series ring. Why? Because I don't have to care.
Well, he signed up with a team where he knew that this was going to be the narrative surrounding him. So, no, I don't think anybody should feel like they have to root for the Astros if they root for Dusty Baker and then root for the Astros. Because, I mean, yeah, when you sign on with the team that you signed on to, you're going to take the baggage along with it. And there's going to be a lot of people who, the Astros fans, who will, if the Astros pull this off, which I think they will, we'll now look at 2017 and say, we didn't need to cheat to win the World Series. You know what I mean? And it's going to...
That makes you look dumber. That makes you look dumber.
You clearly did need to cheat to win the World Series because that's what you did.
Because that's what
that means.
We will
all this
never way. Know whether or not you could have won the World Series without cheating because you already did it once with cheating. And for the rest of time, until all of you guys are forever gone from the Astros, that's what we're always going to think. It doesn't matter if you didn't actually cheat. We're all just going to think that you did forever. And if there is one fan base that could make them feel really bad, it would be the Phillies. But I think second are the garbage Atlanta fans who constantly yell the tomahawk chop. And as Justin has pointed out many times, throw garbage on the field on a regular basis. These guys, I hope they make the Astros cry in their locker rooms.
I'm so glad the garbage thing is catching on. But also,
it's catching
if they
on this podcast because I won't stop.
Yeah, on this one.
If they didn't have to cheat to win it, and this proves that, then all this emotional terrorism they've been undergoing was for no reason.
Yep.
That makes them look dumber.
Yeah. No, there's no way they come out of this looking good, except they do have members of the national media carrying water for them, and it's really annoying. So, Liz, who do you think is going to win the series? That's a rapid topic change as we're running.
Who do I think is going to win the series? Probably
yes, who
the
is
Astros.
Going to...
I mean, right. there are no winners here.
Astros in how many games?
Let's see. If the Braves have to lose, I want them to lose in the most embarrassing way possible. So let's have them be swept.
All right, an Astros sweep of the Braves. Okay.
I'd hate it, but I'd love it.
All right, Justin.
I'll go complete opposite. I'll say Braves in seven. Any other number just seemed like too little. Like the Braves beating the Astros 4-2, just even that seemed like, Houston's mm-hmm. not going to, they're going to withstand this momentum the Braves have at least a little bit. But I feel like the Braves are coming in with a hot hand, and they don't have, I think the Astros are going to get all of the scrutiny. So I think more of the pressure is going to be on Houston.
I picked Houston to win in six games. I think their experience in the World Series will come in handy. These guys are just kind of assassins in the postseason, and maybe they've found a new way to get signals or whatever. I don't know what it is, but they're still doing it. And so whether it's cheating or not cheating, I think the Astros are a better team than the Braves right now, and I think their pitching staff is a little bit better than Atlanta. So I think also having home field advantage will help, and I have the Astros winning in six games. And if anybody listening wants to hear more about the World Series, you can tune into the SB Nation World Series preview that I did with Chris Willis from Talking Chop and Ashley McLennan from D-Rays Bay, Bleed Cubbies Blue, and Bless You Boys. That's going to be on the Good Fight podcast feed beginning Tuesday morning and on basically every other SB Nation podcast feed as well. So we'll step away. We'll take one more quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to some news that came out here from the AP and a couple other places about baseball and a potential work stoppage this offseason. It's the labor wars are heating up now that the World Series is underway and the offseason is almost here. We'll do that coming up next on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So and a story by the – and I had mentioned this a couple of times leading up to the end of the regular season and into the playoffs. I thought it was interesting that after all last offseason and the offseason before, when there was all of the talk about COVID protocols and the very public battles between the Players Association and Major League Baseball, that during the course of the 2021 season, we really didn't hear anything about any of the negotiations going on with the collective bargaining agreement. And I've got to believe they were going on during the course of the season. I don't know how intensely they're, but we didn't hear about any meetings that were taking place either in person or virtual, and every other part of the negotiations of the previous two seasons, everything was done in the media. So I kind of took that as an encouraging sign that at least maybe everybody was working behind the scenes to try and get some things done. Well, the day before the World Series is set to start here on Monday, there was a story in the Associated Press where they basically reporting that baseball's ninth work stoppage, the first in 26 years, appears almost certain to start on December 2nd. Which would freeze the free agent market and threaten the start of spring training in February. The story does note that negotiations have been taking place since last spring, but each side thinks the other has not made proposals that will lead toward an agreement that replaces the five-year contract that expires just before midnight on December 1st. So, you know, I think this is, we're kind of talking about the fact, you know, we're writing a lot of articles and we're talking a lot about different free agents the Phillies can go out and get and different trades that the Phillies can make. And we're talking about them like there isn't this huge shoe ready to drop with the labor wars that there could be a lockout. I mean, there's certainly going to be, I would imagine, Liz, there's probably going to be a transaction freeze, you know, once the old collective bargaining agreement goes by the wayside, because right now, I don't think general managers and team presidents have any idea what kind of money they're going to be allowed to spend, what the rules for signing free agents are going to be, because so much of this stuff is kind of up in the air right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, any general manager who says, well, I don't know how much I'm going to have to spend, is lying, because it's not like there's going to be a massive, enormous foundational change. They're still going to, the luxury tax, if they get their way, if, you know, management gets their way, it'll be lower. And so then they'll just have to adjust for however, you know, a handful of million dollars. Like, it's really not, like, I think the article in the AP quoted Brian Cashman. Like, it's really not that dramatic, Brian. He was like, I just have no idea. Like, yes, you do. Don't do that. That's just a tactic of management for the general manager to be like, I don't know, we might not be able to do anything. I might have no money to spend. The players might take all of my money. Not going to happen. And I'll say that there have been meetings going on, and there was one article sometime earlier this year about a possible work stoppage, and it might have been in The Athletic. And it was just gassing up everyone. Like, yeah, they're going to reach an agreement. The sides are working. Everyone's optimistic that there won't be a work stoppage. I remember looking at that and reading it and thinking, what is the point of this? Which side wanted this article? Because it's not, none of it is true. I can't imagine that whoever wrote it talked to anybody with any direct knowledge, because the quotes in this article show that any progress that was made is immaterial to the actual agreement that has to take place for this 2022 season to happen. If they say that neither side has made, you know, if both sides say that the other haven't made any, you know, sensible project, you know, offer, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, to actually that work for a contract in their eyes, no one's going anywhere for a while. Everyone better buckle down. But anytime someone from the management side said something, an owner, a GM, you know, even a coach, because they're paid by the GM. It's their position is different from the players. Anytime any of them says anything, take it with a grain of salt, or just outright assume they're lying. That's what management. That is the point of management during a strike. Like, there have been a rash of strikes around the country this past month. And all you have to do is look at management tactics and look at what workers can do when they apply some pressure. And that is something the Players Association has been so reluctant to do. And I want to see them actually take the bull by the horns and be like, no, we don't have to work if you're not going to give us anything that we want. We don't have to work. Withholding your labor is the most important thing you can do, and it makes the biggest difference. And I want to see them do that and make the owners pay. That's what I want.
In regards to who would let that article leak out, the only reasoning I can think is that they would, whoever did, wanted it to look like things were going one way before the inevitable breakdown of communication that we all knew was coming, which to me feels like the owners, so they could say, hey, everything was fine, and then the players did this. So, like, to me, that's just setting the table for them to blame. Because, I mean, Liz, is this incorrect to just assume that anything that gets leaked about this, which is the only way we're going to receive information about it, is going to come from the owners? Isn't that why there was radio silence for so long?
I don't think that's – I think up until this point, that's probably been true. But in the future, I hope it won't be. Both sides have to be leaking information, especially since it's obvious Major League Baseball is going to do it. If they can't be the only ones leaking information to influence the press. The PA has to do it because it's a negotiating tactic. And if they want to be serious about this, which everything indicates that they do, they're not going to roll over like they did for the past three collective bargaining agreements have been some level of embarrassing. They can't do that.
I think this absolutely came from either the teams or from Major League Baseball itself, because the only quote you have in here is of Brian Cashman from the New York Yankees, who said that he has not yet had the conversation with what potentials he might have as far as spending in the offseason. And the only description of what the two sides are negotiating about, they talk about that what teams have proposed. Teams have proposed eliminating salary arbitration and allowing players to become free agents in the offseason after they turn 29 and a half, rather than the six seasons of Major League service in place since 1976. And it says teams have proposed a lower luxury threshold along with a payroll floor. And then the article notes players have refused for decades to consider a payroll floor, feeling it would lead to a salary cap. And then they talk about, concerned with tanking by rebuilding teams and a slide in spending on major league payrolls, players want changes in the current deal. But that's all. It doesn't offer any specifics about what changes the players want in the current deal. So that tells me they didn't talk to somebody from the players union, or at least the players union isn't talking yet, that this came from Major League Baseball, came from the owners, because it's a lot more detail on things that the owners and things that teams have said that they want to negotiate, changes that they want to make, but the article doesn't mention any specifics on changes that the players want to make. So if we're talking about where this is coming from, I think it's coming from Major League Baseball or the owners, based on the information that's put out in this article.
I love the owners' position. It is so spineless and careless that people, like, as transparent as they are, they're still going to put stuff like that out there. They're still going to do stuff like when they're calculating game day revenue, they'll ignore their stakes in regional broadcast deals. They'll ignore their ballpark adjacent real estate developments, and then just give a much smaller number by being like, well, yeah, that's not actually part of it. And then it creates this further complication for negotiations that before they can even decide how this game day revenue is split, they have to figure out what it is. They have to agree what it even is first, which is like, puts you so much further back than you have to be if you were negotiating good faith, which they clearly are not. It's just so comical that these cosmically rich people will act like, oh no, we simply don't have the money to fix this, and are trying to get cute about how much money they even have, as if it's going to like be a difference that means anything to fans. Like, I don't know why the owners try to waste time garnering fan support in the media, because I don't know what fan would support them. Like, what do fans have to gain from the owners? The owners want to shrink the luxury tax, which I also think is great that it's one of the central pillars of this, that, like, because it impacts the Phillies and conversations we've had about the Phillies for the past couple of years. Will the Phillies go over the luxury tax? Well, if the owners have their way, the luxury tax threshold is going to drop from 210 to 180 million. And the Phillies are what, right around that? Are they over that at this point? Like, this is going to be great for the Phillies finally go over the luxury tax, but it's because John Middleton's fighting to not have to pay as much.
No, for sure. I mean, so I think that this is all just leading to a very frustrating offseason for fans who want to think, and it's going to be really slow. It's going to be really obnoxious. We're going to be talking, and I guess there could be a flurry of free agents who sign early, but I feel like the Players Association is probably going to tell players, Liz, not to sign, right? I mean, they're going to tell them, like you said, to kind of hold off and exert some pressure that way. I just, if and when it finally, there is finally an agreement, it's going to be a wild frenzy probably for a couple of weeks once that happens. But do you see players potentially signing early before the CBA runs out?
No one of any note. I mean, maybe some smaller deals, but this is the list that the AP provided. It's Carlos Correa, Corey Seager, Freddie Freeman, Trevor Story, Max Scherzer, Marcus Semien, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Michael Conforto, and Kevin Gausman, who are all free agents coming into this offseason. I can pick out at least five of them who will be signing deals big enough that they won't want to do it before things are settled. I mean, the teams probably won't offer them one, but Chris Bryant was the Cubs union representative. There's absolutely no way he would do anything that would make the union look bad, make him look bad, or jeopardize the player's position in any way. And signing contracts early is something that could do that, because the most important thing about these types of work stoppages is solidarity. All of the players have to be together. Everyone has to be of the same mind, and they have to be able to agree. Like, I'm hoping that someone is covering this. There have to be rules on what players tweet from their accounts. They have to be supportive. You know, they're not going to be forced. But the point is to get fans on their side and to make them angry enough at the owners to demand that they fix whatever's happening. Because it's been a while since we've had a work stoppage. I think the last one we had was long before the presence of social media. And so this is going to be incredibly fascinating, because we're going to see in front of us the people who understand the point of baseball, who understand the way it works with players earning money and building all of the clout, being the reasons that everyone comes, versus people who believe that they're all fantasy owners all the time and want to put themselves in the place of the owner and GM and be like, you know, if we pay these players too much money, God, how are we ever going to afford player whose name I've seen in the, you know, in the fantasy reports because someone else owns them and I don't? Like, we're going to see who's smart and who is not. And I'm hoping that there's a chance to educate people. And I hope the players and the Players Association is up for doing that, because they have
I hope the Players Association doesn't have a Steve Cohen who's just on Twitter tweeting things that people on their side are just clenching their teeth over. Like, stop doing that. Don't tweet that. Oh, my God.
Actually, having a Steve Cohen, it's going to be hilarious to see what he says.
Yeah.
Because he's the only owner that's like majorly active on Twitter, and he does not know when to shut up. And he has much money that I don't think he's ever really had to. I mean, billionaires and, you know, millionaires are, you know, cheap by nature in a way. It's going to be fascinating to see how he chooses to relate to fans over this. Because you would assume that actually fans, he actually reads his mentions like an idiot. He actually reads what people say.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that.
He shouldn't do that, but he does.
No.
And fans, I think Mets fans already hate him so much that they will jump down his throat.
It's amazing how much they loved him last offseason. He was the talk of New York
because
he had all that money. Yeah, but now that ain't the case anymore. Well, listen. It's gonna be a frustrating offseason, I think, for fans who want to see things get rolling. But I think there's some much needed changes that need to be made in how this game is financially structured. And these two sides the owners have to be willing to change some things up here, no doubt about it. And the players aren't gonna get everything they want, but they got to get some things, because right now it's definitely favored way too heavily in the team's court. So we'll see how these two sides are able to negotiate, and hopefully this offseason won't drift into March before things get settled. But I don't have I actually have some confidence that it will, that they'll figure it out, because I think even Major League Baseball isn't stupid enough to have another delayed season or canceled season, not after the pandemic in 2020 with a shortened season. Nobody has the stomach for that at this point. So we'll see how things go. All right. Final thoughts here to wrap things up. Justin, final thoughts from you as we end episode 514.
We got three quick ones. First of all, work stoppages cost, you know, the ripple effect of work stoppages and potential strikes, of there not being baseball over negotiations, you never really even know the full impact that that this winds up having. And I found an article from 2011 that Bob Vetrone wrote for the Daily News, where he just talked about how in 1981 the strike that happened it derailed a potential Phillies dynasty. And you know, that's an aspect we've been doing a lot of what ifs in, I think, Philly's commentary universe lately. And that's another one where it's like they don't have that shortened season at 81. Who the hell knows what's going on? Pete Rose and had just had tied Stan Musial's NL hits record. Bake McBride and Gary Matthews were contributing in huge ways on offense. Steve Carlton had won like 9 out of 10 start. Like it was there, and then baseball was gone, and no one remembers that because it was a shortened season. So like, yeah, just things to consider. We're about to introduce a new chapter of what ifs potentially. Fortunately, the Phillies aren't good enough to really, you know, be in that conversation this time. You mentioned Bryson Stott earlier. I just wanted to break off some of his stats. He's hitting .370 in the AFL in 8 games with a .1032 Ooh. OPS, 4 doubles. Kid's crushing it. That's just good to see. And lastly, Liz and I had a conversation on continued success the other day about what the future of that podcast will be, since we've now entered the territory where we've done 10-year anniversaries of every Phillies team to win the NL East from 2007.
Any of them were worth the crap.
I don't know how we got through all the way through
Woo,
them.
I know.
Thought, boy. Yeah. But here we are with, you know, the bad times about to be 10 years away. So our plan there is to I have handwritten the names of all your favorite rebuild era Phillies on little pieces of paper. Literally, I sent Liz a picture of this today and put them in a glass jar.
No pictures, though.
And from Liz was complaining today about, you know, I put in hours of work on this project, and her first thought was, you didn't do enough work.
No, so I told you it was amazing and how excited I was about it, and then you're like, it's just position players, and I named 8 pitchers off the top of my head.
And because of that, I'm probably going to throw the pitchers in there as well. My point is, we need a name for the jar because we're going to draw names from it. We're going to go all in on rebuild era Phillies. You know, when they're from and why we've selected them. You know, that's still TBD whether we're going to go chronologically or just pick them from the rebuild era. We'll see. But that's going to be our gag moving forward. And what I want our people's help with is naming the jar. So far, I have just Mason Jar for Roger Mason, since he was like kind of one of those guys in 1993. But I feel like there's other better names out there. So if anybody wants to throw some suggestions out there, I'm open to it.
How about the Figgy Pen?
See, I told you there's limitless options.
That's good. I like it. I like it. That's good. And you're right about that thing about 1981. I had forgotten about that. But yeah, the Phillies were 34-21 at the end of the first half of that season. They had a 1.5 game lead on the Cardinals, and they're 4 on the Expos. And then they had already, you know, the way the Major League Baseball rules in 1981 were, they decided that whoever was in first place before the strike automatically got into the playoffs. So the Phillies in the second half had nothing to play for. Like, they were already in the playoffs. There was nothing they could do to help themselves in the second half. Even if they'd managed to win the second half, the second place team would have been their opponent in the division series. And so the Phillies actually went 25-27 in the second half. Who knows how good they would have done if the season had just kept rolling along, because they had a .618 winning percentage in the first half of 1981. So I think you're right. They should have probably won the NL East and gone on to the NLCS again that season. Anyway, Liz, final thoughts from you.
We're going to be talking a lot about labor on this podcast over the next however many months. If anyone has questions, please reach out to me on Twitter. I love talking about labor matters. I love reading about labor stuff. I've got multiple books on baseball labor issues that I cannot wait to break back into over the offseason, and perhaps the strike deadened early season. So reach out to me with questions. I'd love to answer any of them that you have on the most exciting topic in the world, the baseball work stoppage.
Yeah, but Liz, I say actually because it's to me, my eyes glaze over, my eyes cross sometimes because I just don't understand so much of it. But Liz really has a really strong knowledge on all of these issues. So take her up on that, folks. And we're going to be leaning on her expertise during the course of the offseason to kind of help us through all of the all the labor issues as they are coming up, because it is going to be the offseason storyline. And that's going to have to get taken care of before any of the fun stuff starts. All right, folks, listen, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thank you, Justin and Liz, for joining me once again on the podcast. And, folks, don't forget to check out our Patreon. We've got a new Absolutely Hammered up there that Justin did with Chris Jones. Go to patreon.com/hittingseason and sign up on one of the tiers there to get that show and all the other bonus stuff we have going on over there. And tell your friends about the Good Fight Podcast feed. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is you get your pods. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.